Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you today from a late Vancouver afternoon that's desperately trying to turn nice, even though it's still cloud-covered. But I'll be talking across the globe into the future as Neural Dalwood, whose voice you'll hear momentarily, is sitting in Melbourne. And Neural is a lecturer in the Department of Physiotherapy at Monash University, and maybe more importantly for the purpose of our conversation today, she's a PhD candidate, and we're going to talk about the first paper coming out of that effort, which will be published in the May 2020 issue of Medical Education under the title Students as Patients, a Systematic Review of Peer Simulation in Healthcare Education. Thanks, Neural, for making the time to talk.
Thanks so much, Kevin, and thank you for providing me with the opportunity. It's much appreciated.
I'm very much looking forward to it. From our brief conversation with one another before we started recording, it was very clear that this is something that's near and dear to your heart and sounds to me as though you've been involved in peer simulation quite extensively. So maybe the best place to start is just for me to ask what you do in the way of peer simulation in terms of your role at Monash and how that stimulated your interest in this particular project.
Sure. Well, I'll give you a bit of a history first as to how I really almost stumbled into peer simulation. As you said, I am a physiotherapist, a clinical educator and a lecturer, and my key interest has always been how best to prepare physiotherapy students for clinical practice. So I've been fortunate during my career, like many healthcare educators, to move regularly between the clinical and the academic environments. And this has really informed my teaching, and my main focus is to assist students to successfully manage that transition into clinical placement. I think it's a really, as we're all aware, it's a really difficult transition. It really tests the capacity of students' knowledge and skills and confidence and resilience. And it's also quite challenging for clinical educators as well. In our circumstance, physiotherapists who are actually working out in the hospital system and working with our students. So my interest is in how best to develop clinical competence in students while also supporting our educators. But most importantly, I guess, ensuring that the patient receives physiotherapy that is safe, effective, culturally responsive and patient-centred. When I was looking at how best to bridge this gap from campus-based curriculum to hospital-based curriculum, simulation stood out. Obviously, there was a lot of evidence around simulation. We know simulation works. We know it's effective. And working with simulated patients has really positive outcomes for learners. But I must say that the financial constraints that are often published around working with simulated patients are certainly reflected in my workplace. So it led me to the question to sort of look around and think, is there anyone else who we can train to portray the patient role? And funnily enough, we had lots of students, and that sort of set me on the path of perhaps we can actually train our students to be patients for each other in perhaps a similar way that you train a simulated patient. So that was the genesis of my interest, certainly the genesis of the program that I now run here in the Department of Physio at Monash University, and the genesis of my PhD.
And so in terms of training up somebody to portray a role, most of the simulated patients that you use, I presume, to be like ours, where they're lay people and may have some acting background or dramatic interest. In many ways, the students that you're training as peers, as I understand it, are similarly non-expert so far in the particular issues. What did you anticipate, or what have you seen in the early days, would be particularly challenging or particularly beneficial to move from general population more to a student-based population?
Great question. I think, you know, the first point I would say that is important, so a colleague of mine, Shane Pritchard, who was just completing his PhD, he has published a paper where he interviewed simulated patient educators here in Australia, and the findings of that were really interesting in that the educators of simulated patients don't consider it essential for those portraying the patient role to have formal acting training or previous experience, and that it is considered that the skills required for effective patient portrayal can be learned. To give you context, the peer simulation program that's run here at the university is run in third year, so the students have already done the first 2 years of theoretical content. They've also had an observational placement where they sort of go out in a big gang to hospitals and, you know, and observe physiotherapists working with patients. So they have teeny bit of clinical experience. They certainly have the majority of their theoretical background, and the peer simulation program is run in what we call a pre-clinical semester. So we're not working with students who are complete novices and have no sort of medical or theoretical knowledge. I find that the students certainly don't generally, by and large, don't have any acting experience, although some of them do. But generally that's compensated for, I guess, if you like, by adequate medical knowledge to allow them to improvise if they need, and certainly to portray fairly realistically the movements and mannerisms and communication of certain patients.
And so that practical interest obviously stimulated some questions for you. What led you to think that you needed to approach this in a more scholarly way in terms of trying to identify the successes or barriers, given that it sounds like you have some very strong first-hand experience?
Well, as I said, I feel like I stumbled into peer simulation. I then sort of put my head up and looked around and thought, is anyone else doing this? Because we could share, we could collaborate, we could share ideas. I need to use the best available evidence to ensure that my program is aligning with best practice in simulation. And certainly there is smatterings of work done with peer simulation. I would say that when I first went to the literature, one of the difficulties I found, and certainly, you know, it's noted in the systematic review as well, was really differentiating actually what's role play, which I consider is very different to peer simulation, and what is in fact this more formal structured peer simulation. So looking into the literature to try and, as I said, find some best practice guidelines around training patients to portray the patient role for each other, I realised there were some pretty big gaps and, you know, lots of opportunities, I guess, to really to start A, finding out what evidence there really is, hence the systematic review, and then B, really finding out where those gaps are and trying to address those to make sure that we're not just assuming that students can't be trained to portray patient roles, that it's all too hard, or on the other end of the spectrum, that the training requirements for an actor or a willing volunteer, if you like, are the same as that required for a student. We can't make those assumptions. So hence the PhD and, you know, lots of questions to answer, I think, which is really exciting.
Certainly if you need to get a PhD conducted, it's not only exciting, it's critical.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to ask you to elaborate a little bit on the distinction you just made, which I think is quite important. You said role play versus peer simulation. So what's the defining characteristic of those two things for you in terms of how you're trying to constrain the focus of your project?
So if we zoom in on the definition of peer simulation, it's an approach that's a structured, repeated practice of skills. Importantly, it's conducted in a simulation-based education environment, with a framework for preparation for patient portrayal is important, and also an emphasis on accurate patient portrayal, realism and maintaining character. So to recap, to be included in the systematic review that's just been published, the papers had to describe obviously a learning activity that involved a patient and healthcare professional interaction. It needed to be conducted in a simulation-based learning environment with students portraying both of the roles. However, additionally, the patient cases needed to be formally developed by someone other than the students themselves, and there needed to be some provision of preparation for patient portrayal. And we cast a fairly wide net with that one. We were fairly, I don't know how to describe it, liberal, with, you know, as long as there was some attempt for the students to actually prepare for their patient portrayal, the papers were included.
I want to get to what it is you actually saw in that literature, but before I do that, I'm curious as to why you prioritized peer simulation over role play. Was there some theoretical or observed advantage that you thought might be present for that group relative to the other form?
It really came about almost by chance. So we use a lot of role play in our physiotherapy course here, and I think, you know, sort of across Australia, it's used a lot in, you know, medical education, nursing education, occupational therapy, and certainly I know it's used a lot in physiotherapy departments and schools around Australia. So certainly in that first 2 years of our physiotherapy course that I was mentioning earlier, our students would be engaging in a lot of role play in a fairly standard practical class. So you be the patient, jump on the bed, you've got a sore knee, you know, the physiotherapist is now going to come and assess you. When, however, I developed the peer simulation program, I knew it needed to be more formalised. I knew that, A, it needed to be different from a standard practical class, and B, to really adequately prepare students for the realities of clinical placement, it needed to be much more formalised and structured. I wanted the students to honour the patient's role more rather than just jumping on the bed and being the patient. You know, because obviously anyone who's portraying a role as a simulated patient is acting in some way as a patient's proxy, so I think honouring the patient's story is really, really important. And also the other thing that I haven't mentioned and is not part of my systematic review but certainly part of the approach that we do here is that we also have tutors and fourth year students during the simulation portraying the role of clinical supervisors on placement. So that's sort of another layer of role portrayal and interaction that replicates the clinical environment as much as possible.
Thanks. And having set that all up, if I can ask you to zoom in on the highlights, so to speak, what did you find most exciting or most surprising or most puzzling from the literature that you were able to uncover?
Okay, I'll go with interesting and exciting. What I think was interesting and exciting, and also echoes our experience here at Monash University, is that peer simulation is effective and is well received by students. Students like it. Students value it. It also has positive effects on communication and, really importantly, development of empathy. And I think that's perhaps a point of uniqueness in peer simulation, that ability to figuratively sort of step into the patient's shoes and the development on empathy. The other really exciting thing that, again, is mirrored by what we find here with our students is that students actually consider it to be realistic. And that came out quite strongly. So in one of the randomised controlled trials and five observational trials in the systematic review, students considered that the peer simulation was realistic. In fact, in the randomised controlled trial, there were two groups. There was one group of students working with actors and one group of students working with fellow students as patients. And the realism score between both groups was the same. There was no significant difference between the two. So I think there's some really interesting thoughts around realism, and you know, and there's a lot of talk in the literature about what needs to be real and how real does a simulator need to be and the functional task alignment of a simulator, all of which I think is really important for future research in peer simulation.
And the outcomes that you were just describing, the gain in empathy, the gain in communication or others, to what extent was it distinction made or were observations collected on both the person who was acting as the simulator as well as the one who was in the role of learner?
In many of the papers, the students were actually switching roles. So they were playing both the role of the patient and then they would switch roles and then they would play the role of the healthcare professional. So in those randomised control trials, there were the five RCTs. Each of those RCTs had, you know, a group of students working with simulator patients. In that group, there was no switching of roles. The students only played the healthcare professional role. However, in all of the RCTs, what was called the role play group, I would like to call it peer simulation group, the students actually switched roles, so they played both. So the data was collected from both perspectives.
So, in fact, it is hard to separate out by the time you get through this, but it seems to help the group as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly, in the five observational studies, similarly, all of the participants in those studies were, again, switching roles. You know, when you are looking at the evidence around peer simulation, it can be a little hard to tease out what is the student learning from the patient experience and what is the student learning from the physiotherapist experience. And again, my colleague Shane Pritchard, who I mentioned earlier, he's done some really nice qualitative research with focus groups with physiotherapy students engaged in peer simulation and really tried to tease out some of those perspectives of learnings from the different roles.
Well, and that leads me to a question I think I might wrap up on, because it eventually gives you a chance to talk about some of the next steps that you're planning to engage in. But did any of that allow you to tease apart or think differently about the mechanism of action in terms of, for those who want to use peer simulation, do you have any guidance about how to do it well?
From my own personal experience, I think I've got quite a bit of guidance. but there's no evidence yet to support that, so watch this space on that one. From the systematic review, no, unfortunately, we were unable to really draw out key design features from the 12 papers. There was just a really diverse range of approaches, both to the preparation for patient portrayal, for those portraying that role, but also diverse approaches to the simulation activity itself. Some of them were very quick 10-minute interview, you know, patient interviews, ranging right up to an hour interaction with a patient that's, you know, comprising an interview and an assessment and getting the patient out of bed and movement analysis. And there was also a really diverse range of approaches and sometimes limited information about key design features like costumes and use of moulage and whether observers present and, you know, the length, as I said, the timing of the activity and the length of the activity. So we really were unable to come to any definitive conclusions about key design features, and certainly, again, provides an opportunity for exciting future research, I think.
Yeah, and if nothing else at the moment, provide some reassurance that despite the heterogeneity of approaches, it still led to the perspective that these things can work well, and so hopefully,
absolutely,
you know, unpacking why just gets us a little bit further ahead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing how that plays out, and as you said, we will watch this space. For those who are interested in the details, the paper we've been discussing is titled Students as Patients, A Systematic Review of Peer Simulation in Healthcare Education. You'll find it in the May 2020 issue of Medical Education, authored in the first position by Narelle Dalwood, whose voice you've been listening to. Thanks again, Narelle, and best of luck with your PhD.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Again, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about my research and to spread the word about peer simulation, and I look forward to hopefully lots of conversation and collaboration with others. Thank you.